Yo, this is BJ Gajor with the BJ Gajor Podcast, and on today's episode, I'm talking about the latest Netflix documentary on Arnold Schwarzenegger, the Austrian Oak himself, a three-part series covering his athletic career, his acting career, and his career as an activist slash politician. I really enjoyed it. I had a lot of takeaways from it, and I wanted to share what I saw in it. Again, I love to watch motivational content. It helps me stay in the game, especially when times get tough. You know, keep that big picture mentality, focus on the process, consistency, all that good stuff. Keep showing up. I really enjoyed this documentary. Took a lot from it. I wanted to share my insights with you. Before I get into it, I wanted to quickly remind you that if you give a 5-star rating and review in iTunes, I will check it, and then I will look at it, okay? Here's the latest one that we had. Great podcast, 5 stars, much appreciated. The BJ Gajor Podcast is great. I listen to it on my way to work or on my walks. BJ gives great fitness and lifestyle information with honesty, integrity, and humor. Albert Romero, he's also a member of the DailyBJ.com. I see him consistently making his post-workout reports, showing up in those express workouts, full-body 20-minute workouts for busy parents and professionals. This guy gets it. I appreciate your support, man, and I know what that's doing for you in your life, because, you know, these workouts, man, they give you the ability, they desensitize you to challenges, but they give you that energy, they set the tone for the day, they allow you to control what you can, at least no matter what happens in a given day outside of your control. You moved, you honored your fucking body, you got it in, all right? And that's really what it's all about. No one knows that better than Arnold, and we'll talk about that as well. But one thing to note too, if you give the 5-star takes a second, right? The review, less than a minute. That was a very quick review. I'm not looking for like long-ass books. I just want, you know, quick stuff that helps us get out there and get more information out there. But you can also ask a question and or make a podcast episode request in your review. So I make it worth your time. And again, I'll read it on the show and or answer it. And if it makes sense to make it a full episode, I'll consider it. No guarantees, but and then if I can answer it at the beginning of the show, I'll do that as well. So it just really helps us get it out there. I also wanted to just give a shout out to our members of the DailyBJ.com, the TDBJ app. July content just started yesterday at the time of recording this. Second half of the year, the second wave, if you will, in terms of how we program. So we did our mid-year review, and now we're going into the second half of the year from a bigger baseline, but we're going to keep climbing and finish strong by the end of the year. You get a free 7-day trial to experience our flagship program, Express, 20-minute full-body workouts for busy parents and professionals. All follow along, by the way. 6 workouts each month, 3 body weight, 3 minimal equipment, med ball, dumbbell, band. These workouts are just so good. I did a competitive analysis recently and looked at some other people, what they're doing. I'm sorry, man. It's just kind of a fucking joke. This is the best, most complete home fitness program on the planet. The production quality, the total fitness component, the amount of content. We're also reorganizing it, rebranding. It's tough when you have so much content, figure out how to organize it and make it as user-friendly as possible. We're working on that right now actively. And I've got a big promotion this month where if you become a member, all right, and you can cancel anytime, but if you become a member, my 28-day shred program is free with membership. You can also own it if you don't want to become a subscriber. You can just buy it. And then I have a bunch of good free featured content. Some of my favorite mobility flows, the step up flow, the hangs flow, the dirty down dog flow, stuff that's really transformed my body that can really help you get out of pain for the hips, the knees, the shoulders, the back. Lots of great content on there right now. And then you can also try, beyond the free 7-day trial, I made the first 3 Gorilla Corn workouts of this year, my muscle building program, GG1, 2, and 3, upper, lower, and core. You can view those for free. Obviously, if you want to get the rest of that quarter one program where you want to start, you'd have to purchase that. But I just wanted to give people an opportunity to try it out and just see, what we're talking about here. So be sure to check it out. It's a free 7-day trial, thedailybj.com. And then finally, before I get into the show here, sleeves sold separately, our men's athleisure line. We just dropped a bunch of new summer gear, our wife lover, husband lover tank tops. Man, so silky smooth, antimicrobial and moisture wicking fabric. We have brand new Lunge Man shorts, our gym and swim shorts, bestsellers. And then we also restocked our best-selling jogger. We call it the Sprinter. It's for fit men who move fast and fuck slow. So go to sleevesoldseparately.com. Check out the new gear. Get that summer drip going, baby. Okay? And I appreciate you guys listening. If you're new to the show, by the way, be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And I am the former fitness director for the Men's Health brand. I'm also the author of Your Body is Your Barbell, the definitive guide to body weight training, and my brand new book, The Ultimate Push-Up Guide, available as a Kindle or paperback on Amazon. Getting great feedback on that. Grow your chest, chisel your abs, and build next-level upper body strength at home with my five-level push-up progression system. When I was 14 years old, I couldn't do a single push-up, had to start on the knees. Now I'm about to turn 41 in a couple months. I can do advanced single arm push-ups, handstand push-ups, Superman plyo push-ups, you name it, and this is how I got there. The benefit of the book is it won't take you as long as it did me, all right? So be sure to check it out. So thanks again to Albert for the review, and let's get into the show here. I want to talk about some overarching themes or big takeaways from the series. There's no spoiler alert here. It's a documentary. So, I mean, this is real life. A lot of you know this stuff, but, you know, they broke it down into three unique parts because what's so, you know, there's so many things that are unique about Arnold, all right? But one thing is that there are very few people in the history of the world that found the pinnacle of success in multiple careers within a lifetime, and he did it within three. As an athlete or bodybuilder, then as an actor, or, you know, ultimately just like a showman, and then three as an activist slash politician. I mean, it's... Honestly, I'm still trying to find one pinnacle, honestly, you know. So it's just super impressive. And the reasoning behind that is there's just certain habits he had that he took to every fucking obstacle he encountered, every challenge he took on. The biggest takeaway for me, all right, and I go through periods of this when I'm at my best, and then, you know, sometimes I lose focus or I get distracted, or I lose motivation because I'm not a fucking robot. I'm not a Terminator. I try to be, but, you know, Arnold was also honest about some of the failures and setbacks he experienced, you know, but this nonstop attitude, and basically what his father told him was, stay busy, be useful. You know, he had no time to be in his feelings. You know, I'm not saying that you become a robot or a machine or you don't feel, okay, but... You know, ultimately, if you get to the point where you allow yourself time to wallow in self-pity or feel bad for yourself or feel sorry for yourself or, you know, look at what other people are doing, compare, and then, you know, why can't I have what they have? You'll never get anything done. At least you'll never get to where you are supposed to go. You'll never reach anywhere near your potential. Even now, what struck me too, he's like showing his life now, a beautiful compound in Austria, and he doesn't really need to do anything now. He's set. He's 75. He's made millions and millions of dollars. He's done everything you could possibly think of, and he still feels compelled to make sure the first 90 minutes of his day are just full with his animals and the stuff he does outside. You know, he really gets up and hits the ground running. And it's like a productivity snowball. And I've seen this too in my own life. When I'm rolling, when things are kicking in and out of the gym, it's a fast start. And once it's rolling, once that momentum is generated, you can ride that whole fucking wave the rest of the day. So, and again, I've gone through times where, you know, and one thing too, I don't want to get into too much of that, but when I was battling some mental health issues like a lot of us were during the pandemic, and I finally kind of encountered some things from my past, then there was a lot of emotion. But what ended up happening was I just got too in them. And when you get too much into your emotions and you can't turn it off, it shuts you down, it slows you down, and it takes a lot of discipline to learn how to feel, but then flip the script and move on. And that's something I wasn't ready for because, honestly, I was kind of a Terminator for the first 35-plus years of my life. I was just trying to get the fuck out of my house. I was trying to do big things, build a name, build the life of my dreams for my wife and I. And I just didn't have the time or energy to look at stuff like that. And that's not good either. You can't run from the past. It'll catch you eventually. But at the same time, too, you have to be able to encounter, tough things from the past or just things you're struggling with in the present, be able to exert emotion or let out your feelings, but in a way that allows you to get right back on track and not get stuck in your feelings. And that's something that took me some work, and I'm still working on it. And it's just that really struck me, because I feel like that's the only way to do what we need to do as humans. We got to stay busy. We have to be useful. And no matter what happens, we can find purpose if those things are accomplished. The other thing that really struck me too is just his enthusiasm. The guy just loves to fucking perform. And anytime you watch stuff like this, you think about how it relates to what you're doing. And, you know, when I've been at my best in my business, that enthusiasm just spills through the screen. And it's been tough for me the last, you know, it's difficult to motivate people in general. It's particularly difficult to motivate people when you yourself are struggling to find motivation. Whether it be the mental health stuff, midlife crisis, turning 40, not having the same, in my mind, relevance or impact I used to when I worked at Men's Health, all that fucking bullshit no one gives a fuck about, but became obsessions for me, you know. And I look back, I'm like, why can't I do what I used to do anymore? And occasionally, you know, I'll reshare or look back at old videos, if you know, because it's tough to make new content every fucking day. And you got to syndicate and recycle stuff. And some people have never seen it. And I look back at some of these old videos and like just the engagement was off the charts. Again, different time too. But people are like, wow, I love this guy. He really shows how much he loves it. And that doesn't happen as much anymore. And it doesn't. And it's tough because I've never been as technically good at what I do. But that doesn't matter to the people watching, listening, reading. That the enthusiasm leads the day, you know? And I'm trying so hard to find a way to tap back into that. It gets tough because I look at how much I have to do each day. And like I said before, like sometimes I just want to fucking cry. I don't know how it's going to get done. My wife is the same way. And, but we just keep going. We keep trying to do our best. And it's tough to find, like, especially as I'm getting older, enthusiasm requires a level of energy I'm having trouble finding and tapping into. And ultimately, I just have to get the work done. That's the most important piece. I keep showing up. I keep getting the work done. But I know the enthusiasm and passion is not coming through the way it used to. And, you know, that's on me to figure out how to do it. But ultimately, Arnold's enthusiasm was just contagious. It is, again, and all emotion is contagious. But, you know, if he was a cynical, hateful, negative person, there's no way he could have achieved the success he's achieved. And he would have had, he still would have had impact just based on who he was, his persona, and just his work ethic. But it would have been the opposite of what you would hope. It wouldn't have been inspiring. It would have been, it would have been a bad thing, right? When showmen go the negative route, we've seen what happens in history. But that's one thing that just caught me is, again, everyone has moments of low motivation and ebbs and flows and depression or negativity and stuff like that. But again, he was so busy and he would just get out of it and keep going. And one of the things that just strikes me about him, all careers, all aspects of his life, the enthusiasm he tackles things with, it really shows up. And then really the process, man, this guy was truly about the process. You know, a lot of people jump into things like he had no, we'll talk about the political side of things and not like in the political bullshit, just the fact of like taking on that challenge of having no political experience, being in the minds of most a dumb meathead who could barely speak English and becoming in his own right a pretty successful governor. He got reelected. He made some pretty impactful changes that have lasted since his regime and just the way that people think they want to be that, right? You think you want to be a fucking trainer because you like to work out. Okay, try to do it for 20 years. You know, he obviously had dreams of his whole life of being a politician, a statesman, someone that could make change in the community, the society. And you get into it and it's like, oh shit, this is a lot of work. This is all day. I can't even see my family, you know, and he doesn't need it. He's already the GOAT of bodybuilding, arguably the GOAT of action movies. Why did he have to take? He didn't need to take on this challenge, you know. So he commits to the process in a way that I think few have. The other thing that was really unique too, and this was not just with his workouts, and we'll talk about that specifically. That's obviously where I think most are interested in. But he's his vision, and he talks about this a lot. His vision was so fucking crystal clear, and wherever he was working, on the wall were reminders of the vision, whether you call it a vision board, a mood board, whatever it is, the icons that he wanted to become, like Reg Park, the original Hercules, you know, the American athletes that he wanted to emulate. And he just was so crystal clear with it. And again, when I've had success in my own life, my vision also was locked in. I will be honest in the fact that I've had a cloudy vision for the last several years. And when that's the case, no matter how hard you work, things don't go the way you want them to. You've got to find a way to clear the clouds and be laser focused with your vision. And it was just a reminder to me on that, you know, and that's what inspirations are supposed to be for us. You know, we can't always, we're going to get slowed down. You know, even if you're on the same track, you get in muddy waters, you have to climb some hills, you know, and you can't see the other side until you get to the top. But, you know, this is part of the process. And if you have to, on a daily basis, you got to check in with those visions. I try to put up athletes that have motivated me in my gym. I got to start doing a better job of doing that within my office where I do the work. But that was just really important because, again, vision allows you to actualize. It really does. Like if you can't, I envision myself on the cover of Men's Health, and I became the first personal trainer ever to be in the world's largest men's magazine. I wasn't an actor. I'm not a celebrity. I accomplished that because I put it in my fucking mind, and I figured out who I had to meet, and I did what I had to do, and I sucked it up working with people I didn't want to work with just to find a way to get in front of the right people to get the opportunity. And I can go through that multiple times in my life, but if that vision is not locked in, man, you just don't have the clarity you need to cut through the bullshit and focus on what's important and prioritize what's important in your life. So, you know, those are the big takeaways for me. Like, I mean, and again, these transcend. They allow you to find success and break through plateaus in and out of the gym. So let's talk quickly about, you know, the athlete bodybuilder piece. You know, a couple things struck a chord with me, which is, and I'm a big fan of music, but he would train in a small room with no sound. And what that tells me, and what is essential is he loved to do it. You're not going to, you know, you might not want to do all of what he did physically in and out of the gym, frankly, day in, day out, but he really loved to do it. It's difficult. Like if you absolutely hate working out, yeah, you can go for like 4 weeks, maybe 90 days, but there's no fucking way you can sustain it. And it's not even about the workouts, really. Again, it's the mindset with which you approach training. Is training a chore, or is training something that you, is it a chore? Do you take it for granted, the fact that you can actually move your body without pain, where many other people would just fucking kill to be able to do what you do with your body day in, day out, regardless of its imperfections, the wear and tear that you've accumulated in your body over a course of a lifetime? You know, he really loved to train. He loved the process of building his body. The fact that he could change his body at a cellular level, that he could add slabs of muscle wherever he wanted to shape a physique of his choice. And it's not just the superficial bodybuilding aspect of it. It's the building. Do you understand what I'm trying to say is fuck the body. It's the building. It's the fucking building. It's the engineer mindset. It's seeing in your head what you want to build in and out of the gym. And he loved to fucking take the hammer and just get to work. And he didn't need music. He didn't need any of the other stuff because he was so focused on the vision. That's what I'm trying to tell you right now. You know, many of you motherfuckers don't have a, and I mean that in a positive way. Sorry. I get a little fired up sometimes. You don't have a vision of what you want to be in or out of the gym. And when I don't have that, and I struggle with that sometimes too, I am not living my purpose, and neither are you. So that piece of it really struck me. I mean, like, there are people right now, like, if they couldn't have music or something to listen to, when they would not work out. They would not walk. They would not run. They literally depend on it because they don't want to do it so badly. And I'm just telling you right now, when you don't want to do something, willpower will only get you so far. And you have to find a way to get on the other side of that and fall in love with what can be boring. Because again, like, you want to talk about the staples, the bedrocks of his success, it's routine. He was obsessed with routine, still to this day. And routine is often boring to the average person because they don't have the vision associated with what the routine can deliver over time. And they're not willing to just get into that type of, they're constantly looking for variety. And they can't find a way to fall in love with the structure of a winning routine and winning habits, all right? The other aspect of it too, man, he had a perfect physique. And what I mean by that is there was, no one had a body like Arnold. And what was great about his body too is it was so unique, but he was the age of where bodybuilders looked their absolute best. And yeah, they took steroids, and we'll talk about that in a second here. But, you know, what I mean specifically by that is, you know, it wasn't necessarily all proportionate in the sense that, like, everything was equivalent across his body. Like, his arms and chest were just different. And we'll talk about why that was. But it just, his arms and chest really, he had a pair of legs that anyone would die for, but compared to his arms and chest, like, his arms and chest were just absolutely incredible. Maybe the best biceps I've ever fucking seen. And even with those, and that's something that's unique now, like, bodybuilders today, obviously they're on so many fucking drugs, but they just look like fucking blocks. They look like tanks. Everything is just fucking huge. And, you know, there isn't that, like, wide shoulder, small waist, aesthetic anymore. They're just fucking blocks, and it looks disgusting, frankly, and it's not healthy, obviously. But he still strengthened his weaknesses. His calves and his conditioning are what held him back when he came to America, and that's kind of how he broke through when he finally addressed those areas. But still, a winning physique, and this is what I'm trying to tell you too, like, we all have a best area of our body. You can focus on the stuff that isn't the best, or you can appreciate the fact that, oh, maybe you've got great quads. Awesome. You know, like, and I think that's important in a physique. I don't think something should stand out. And I think that's what's missing now in some ways in today's bodybuilding. But his posing was also the best. You know, bodybuilding is about aesthetics, and you have to know how to show what you've got. You got to be confident. You can't look like you're fucking about to shit your pants when you're on stage. I used to do that, and it's so fucking hard to be able to flex when you're depleted and you're hungry and you're dehydrated and you're like fucking 5% body fat, and you got to find a way to smile or at least not look like you're going to shit your pants. But he loved it, and he took lessons in ballet to help get more graceful, and he was also honest about the steroids. You know, like, these fucking people today, these big action heroes that, like, their heads grow, they double in size for a movie role, and they lie about it. You know, like, look, man, at least he was honest about it. And you would see even in the show, like, there's a big variance in his physique when he was young. Like, because he would go on 4-month cycles of the steroids and prep for competition, then come off of it, and he would shrink significantly. Like, he looked like he would drop about 30 pounds. He'd stay lean, and he still looked great. But he looked natural. He didn't look like he was fucking hulking. And that's the one thing. Again, I don't work with kids, and I don't have kids. But I do think we have a responsibility. All I can do is speak as a boy. I looked up, and I wanted to look like or be some of these athletes, you know, and muscle heroes and action heroes and stuff like that. We all did, right? But it gives us the wrong idea in the sense that, like, we want to achieve that, but they achieve that in unhealthy ways, and they lie about how they went about it, and that's the issue. Whether you take it or not, that's up to you. It's a choice, but the honesty associated with it, just so we all can have reasonable expectations, I think is key. Another thing that stood out is he was willing to work out with and seek advice from opponents slash competitors. He lost to Frank Zane. Frank Zane has one of the most, one of the all-time physiques. I mean, super tiny waist, like huge 18, 17 to 18 inch arms. And he was more conditioned than Arnold. Arnold was a little bit puffy, as they say. And again, this is in bodybuilding, not in real life. But what did he do? He came and worked out with Frank Zane, got advice from Frank Zane. The humility to go and do that, like I've never done that with my competitors. I just, to me, a competitor is just someone that I think about and I just want to fucking crush them. But I know he did too, but he was willing to get in the room with them and talk with them and learn from them, pick their brain, psych them out. You know, that's the next level, man. And then other thing that was really crazy too is just the volume this man was capable of. He would do, okay, here's the reality. Most people could not do 20 sets total in a given workout, period, across the whole body. He would do 20 sets per move slash body part, and he would do five, I mean, at least in the workout he was talking about in the Netflix documentary, and he would do five moves. Five moves, 20 sets each, 100 total sets. It would take him 3 fucking hours, and he split his workout, at least when he was younger, biceps, triceps, chest, back, and legs. And that, by the way, that's also, I think, why his arms and chest were so outstanding is that, like, he... And I think this is important. If you are going out the aesthetics route, your arms need more attention in the gym if you want to build that type of physique. They do, just because you're not on your feet during the day. The legs tend to respond in most cases pretty well. But like he really prioritizes arms. And, you know, like especially as you're moving and sweeping with your arms on stage, it really catches your attention. That was really, I think, his arms and the way they moved into his chest, the thickness in his chest, I think was just what really separated him from all the other great bodybuilders. And there were a ton. There were a ton of amazing athletes in that time frame. So, you know, that's what stood out too. And again, he had a board and he would just check off. Again, you see what I'm talking about? There's always a vision here. And, you know, by the way, I'm a big fan of the EHO style, which means every hour on the hour, I get at least a minute of movement. It could be strength, it could be mobility, it could be both. It could be a little cardio burst, whatever. I just do it to keep me, it keeps me from getting sore and stiff. It allows me to get a lot done over the course of the day. But just that process of just checking it off, you know, he just tallies Roman numeral style till he gets to 5 of each of these movements. And again, the process. And you can accomplish that in one session or you can do it throughout the day. You know, but that really stuck with me. So I just wanted to share that piece of it. Like, just so you, like, you can take steroids, all right? And what that's going to allow you to do is work harder for longer, recover much faster, all that stuff, get a bigger response from every rep you do in the gym. But there's nothing you can take that can make you want to do 20 sets for a single exercise. Most people couldn't even do 5 sets. After about 2 or 3 sets of a single exercise, like, you feel like the diminishing returns. So the mental fortitude and stamina required to keep pushing through on that, it's just insane. Like, this is why he is who he is. Like, and again, like, you can do it physically. It means you can also do it mentally. That's the power of a workout, of a training regimen, is that you can't use the body without the mind. You can use the mind without the body, but you can't use the body without the mind. And that's why it's so impactful. It's not just about the body. And like looking good and that type of stuff, it's what it can do for your fucking mind. It's powerful, all right? Now, the acting side of things, he decides to transition into acting. And, you know, it was like 5 years of crickets until he found the perfect role. And what really struck me in it, and it was Pumping Iron, really. Pumping Iron made him, like, he wasn't just a bodybuilder anymore. Like, people saw, wow, this guy's got... He's a winner. He's got this charisma. He's got this enthusiasm. He's got this humor about himself. And what also was really unique is, and coming from, you know, the son of an immigrant, my father came from Tunisia, North Africa, didn't know the language. And you see the impact that can have on someone when they are a quote unquote foreigner, you know, with their accent, their inability to know all of the colloquialisms, the slang of a language. They kind of sometimes retreat into themselves and they take it personal and people make fun of their accent. And you know, rightfully so. It is insulting. You know, like, can you come over here and learn Arabic? You know, like, it's not. I took a semester in college. I used it as my freshman drop. I'm like, there's no fucking way I'm learning this. It's football season. Okay, it's a tough language, but just learning a new language at any age is tough. But especially later in life. And he turned that weakness for most people into a strength. Like, he had fun with it. He laughed about it. He didn't take it personal. Even if he did take it personal, he didn't show it. He didn't give people that power over him. His accent became his biggest asset. And again, this is just something that people that find success do. They turn strengths, weaknesses into strengths. You know, people know him for his one-liners, but also it's the one-liners delivered, I'll be back. You know, he has this special, no one speaks like him, you know, and no one has a name like him. He really leaned into it. And that was something unique too, because it's really easy to take things personal. And, you know, I saw how it impacted my dad. It made him kind of isolate himself, and he became very distrustful of other people in this country and just couldn't find friends here. So, you know, it's just something that just stood out to me from personal experience. Pumping Iron, if you need a little bit of motivation, that's something you have to watch if you haven't. It's up by many to consider to be one of the top documentaries out there. It's beautifully done. It gives you into a glimpse into the golden age of bodybuilding when it was like brand new, like the Muscle Beach, Venice Beach days. This was just like a new thing here. People actually going in the gym and building their body. It was something that we never saw before in the States. And just to see how he worked with his competitors, the camaraderie he built in the gym, the time, the lifestyle of it. And then you just see the showman nature of him come through. Where these other guys, like, they could do it physically. They couldn't, you know, when he was just a red light performer. When the camera came on, he was actually at his best. He not only loved to work out, but he loved to work out on camera. He loved to work out in front of people. And that's honestly something that like I've always hated. I don't like performing for other people. My least favorite things were filming content with other people around. I would do my best, but like, I can only imagine if I approached it with the level of enthusiasm and showmanship that he did, it would have been even better. And I've done some big things. I've had very successful DVDs. No one's filmed more fitness content than me over the past two decades. But if I had a little more, like, it's usually my least favorite thing. And I got to find a way to flip the script on that, because things will not hit the way you need them to do unless that enthusiasm bleeds through. I'm going to take a quick break. And we'll come back and we'll finish off the acting portion. I want to talk about Terminator 1 and 2, his awesome comedies, some setbacks in acting. We'll finish with his activist politician piece and some closing thoughts. So hope you enjoyed it so far. We'll be back in a quick break. Okay. All right, baby, we are back. I apologize for having to take that break because I was trying to fit in the podcast before I had a couple hours of FaceTime training and consulting back to back. Shout out to Kim G and Jeff McDaniel. Kim is one of our Gorillacorn Gains members who worked on some stuff in her programming. And then Jeff is a trainer and gym owner. And we did some business consulting work and worked on his kind of social media game plan. Great people, longtime supporters. So just want to give them a quick shout out. Where we jumped off was we just kind of moved into the acting stage of Arnold's career. We talked about how there was 5 years of crickets until the perfect role that he found, which was Pumping Iron. And again, you got to check that out. It is such a good documentary. I've watched it a dozen plus times. Anytime you need motivation to get into the gym, man, it's a great pre-workout. It's like the ultimate pre-workout. It's caffeine doesn't hold a candle to Pumping Iron. So you really get an idea of what it takes to build that type of body, the dedication, the all-encompassing lifestyle, you know, it's just the diet, the tanning, you know, like the posing. It really is, it's a full-time job and it takes over your life. And that's what can be so dangerous about it when you push it to the extreme. But I was about to get into, you know, Arnold has had such a Rolodex of films. You know, obviously, I think he's the GOAT of bodybuilding. All right, he's the GOAT, I believe, of the action hero movie. The way it was done in the 80s and 90s, it has not yet been replicated since. I mean, that is the golden era. I mean, he was the golden era of bodybuilding, the golden era of action movies. And he also was amazing in comedies. Twins, True Lies, Kindergarten Cop. Shut up! I mean, he was so funny in Kindergarten Cop. Just became like one of the most, again, whether or not he was critically acclaimed or not, you know what they say about critics. But in terms of fanfare and, you know, the number of franchises he's been involved with, I just recently rewatched Terminator, the 1984 classic. You know, I did a recent episode on The Robots Are Coming, ChatGPT, AI. Like, we're in that age right now. And this is in 84, like almost 40 years ago, and just kind of their visionary take on what it would look like if AI and or robots took over. And this was the perfect role for Arnold. The physicality required. He just kind of became such a machine and robot with his movements. And in the documentary, they talk about how it was originally going to be O.J. Simpson. O.J. Simpson was going to be the fucking Terminator, which would have been a huge mistake. And it just so happened, luckily, because Arnold was in consideration for another role within the film. But James Cameron, the director, made the right choice to put Arnold in that position. And again, like there is no one in the history of the world that could play the Terminator better than Arnold Schwarzenegger. He is a master of timing, and he brought so much to that role. I think he only had like 26 lines, and they were 3, 4, 5 words at a time, but he completely stole the show. Not, I mean, and the other actors, obviously, Sarah Connor and Kyle Reese, you know, and those roles were excellent, but I mean, he stole the show, and this was a huge hit. And the sequel, Terminator 2, which I actually have in the queue, probably for tonight or tomorrow, was arguably even better. Like, I remember I was at a men's health shoot with some people, and we were talking about movies, and I said, man, Terminator 2 is that's one of the all-time movies. And they were like, oh, I don't know about that. Kind of snubbing it, and they can eat me out, because Terminator 2, the special effects, and then the guy who played the T-1000 was so fucking good. I mean, it was such, like, that movie, I remember seeing it when I was 11 years old in a theater in Milwaukee, and, like, it blew me the fuck away. And he then went on this run of just, he was the box office guy. And what was funny, too, is, you know, I'm a huge fan of Stallone, and he and Stallone basically were like, it's hard to give Michael Jordan a rival, but here you go. In terms of 80s rivalries, it was like Larry Bird and the Celtics against Magic Johnson and the Los Angeles Lakers, because they were both fighting for roles, and one would get a role, the other one, and vice versa. And, you know, Stallone is in, and he talks about how, like, I couldn't be like Arnold. Arnold was this hulking guy who just, like, plowed through everyone. So I had to be the guy that could, like, take a lot of abuse but find a way to make it in the end. So, you know, two legends in the game. Two people that also, like, just changed the game in fitness. Like, up until that point, there were people that added physicality to their roles with big Hollywood films and blockbusters, but those guys really dialed in, like, the combination of diet and exercise required to really look the part and inspire people and become these, like, fucking heroes. And, you know, both, I don't know if Stallone's ever been honest about him taking stuff, but I know he got caught with growth hormone in an airport. So we at least know he fucked with GH. But regardless, again, these guys put in the work. Like, they really, Stallone in particular, got in better shape, like, with every Rocky, continue to push the envelope. And obviously Arnold was beyond his bodybuilding prime, but he took on a look that was probably more appealing to the masses. But it's one thing to be an action hero, but, you know, arguably comedy is maybe even more challenging than, you know, drama-based roles or just pure action, because it's not easy to make people laugh. It really is difficult. It's a true skill. I believe a good sense of humor can help people get through the most challenging of times. And it just adds a likability factor that, you know, even when someone is on the opposite side of an ideology or a team or a task, you may hate them, but you respect them, you know, and you might still like them a little bit. So the movies that really come to mind are Twins with Danny DeVito. Again, True Lies was just, it was so good. It was so funny. Jamie Lee Curtis was incredible. John Arnold, oh my God, the guy used to be married to Roseanne. He's 40. This happens at 40. You just like, you mix up celebrity names constantly. There's a good SNL skit about this, by the way, called Celebrity Mom Translator. And Kindergarten Cop was also really good. You know, just him with kids. And there was Junior where he was the first like pregnant male in history. Like he was way ahead of smashing gender norms. But anyway, you know, he talks about though, like he had this movie Last Action Hero, which by the way, I thought was pretty cool. I mean, I know it's like considered a flop. It was panned by critics and it underperformed. It underperformed so badly. Like it put Arnold into like, for him, a very long depression. It was like a week where he didn't leave the house. And he talks about like how much of a blow it was to his ego and self-esteem after all these hits. But again, you know, he came back and did some even, maybe not as big. He kind of maybe had been past the box office peak, but did some great movies after that. And Last Action Hero is kind of like this meta surreal like film where like it like bridges the gap between being in a movie and then being in real life. If you haven't seen it, I still think it's worth the watch. But you know, ultimately the acting side of things, he again showed the ability to be a sponge and to continue to improve and get better and take on challenges. You know, ultimately what you've got to do is lean into your strengths. And he uses physicality to his advantage in all of these roles, you know, being 6'2" and this hulking figure next to the very small, tiny Danny DeVito in Twins. And obviously the physicality involved in Terminator 1 and 2. And there is apparently a new Terminator coming out soon with Sarah Connor and Arnold. That's hopefully trying to go back to the feel of the originals. But man, like, I don't know what he's more known for, to be honest, globally. You might think, it has to be the bodybuilding. But I don't know, his acting and just the one-liners. Like, you know, he was the king of one-liners, as cheesy as some of them may have been. You know, he just delivered them with a flair and style and a commitment that, you know, was required to pull it off. So, and even like, you know, people say the Batman he was in was so shitty, and it's still fun. He's Mr. Freeze and, you know, cool off. There's all these, you know, just, I don't know. I just think he's so fun and so, he's just Arnold, man. I don't know what else to say on the acting side, you know, and obviously became the biggest movie star in the world, guaranteed $30 million a film. And one cool part of the documentary, it's just like him, these beautiful shots in Austria, which by the way, I don't know if you knew this, but I'm half Austrian. My grandma on my mom's side was actually an immigrant from Austria post-World War II. And they are big. They got big bones, thick frames, stocky people. Maybe that's where I got maybe some of my frame or size. I don't know. But it's him like on the slopes, and you know him reaching a new peak, and then looking at the next peak he wants to climb to, and then having to come down to go back up again. And it's really just a great visual of what it takes in life. You know, if you want to take on multiple challenges or transcend success out of one particular realm, and not maybe not just be considered a one-trick pony. But he basically had to climb in all of these from the bottom after being on the top in another realm. And just the humility to go through that, putting your ego aside and being a sponge and learning from others who do it better than you. Just great lessons there. But moving to the politician activist side of things, you know, he became the governor of California, so successful that he got a second term. And again, I like I said, I don't deal with political bullshit here. I'm not going to talk about party affiliation or anything like that. But, you know, ultimately, he did pass some pretty substantial policy that you know, in terms of long-term impact on protecting the environment. California kind of became the state to set the standard with regards to how you manage fossil fuels and energy conservation and just taking care of the environment, period. I know that, again, it's just so sad that we can't even talk about some of this stuff without it being like polarizing, but I look at it more of the standpoint of this guy having no political experience. Yes, he married into the Kennedy family, okay? And but it was also just another demonstration of just the timing that Arnold really knew when it was the right time to get after something, to recognize the opportunity. And like we talked about the acting, you know, pumping iron, he knew that was a role that he could do. In this case, a lot of times what happens with politicians, if you've been in the game a long time, you build up too much of a track record that can be turned against you, whether it's your voting record or policies that you thought may have been good at the time, but then ended up failing, or maybe are outdated or didn't age well, or you have scandal or stuff like that. He entered this, it was a recall. So again, it was special time, and there was a particular recall against the governor at the time, and he only had 2 months to campaign in the recall. So there wasn't really enough time to get enough opposition research on him to work against him. Though some stuff did come out right before the election, like 5 days before, regarding, you know, groping allegations, stuff that he admitted to, some grab-assing behavior that, in those times was common, unacceptable, but common. But it didn't really affect him. You know, he just had kind of this Teflon Don nature. His likability, his humor, and his showmanship really allowed him to win that without the political experience, you know, without the track record needed typically to do a job like that. But beyond just like winning it, like, it wasn't easy. He got into the office and he realized, holy shit, this is an all-day job. I have to like learn all this stuff. I've got to surround myself with the best people to make up for all the gaps in my knowledge and experience. And one thing that stood out is, just like with his bodybuilding and competitors, he instead of, you know, alienating himself from them, he got in the room with them to learn and to schmooze, as he says it. It's a very Austrian thing to say, by the way, schmooze. You know, networking, bullshitting, you know, and he set up this like cigar smoking tent. And I'm not saying that's a healthy thing to do, but, you know, it was a way that, you know, he used his celebrity, and he used the fact that he's one of the most recognizable people in the world to bring people into the tent, on both sides of the aisle. And he wasn't afraid to get in the room with Democrats or Republicans. He just found a way to get things done. And, he was willing to be a sponge and admit when he made mistakes. And I think one thing he said early on, because as often happens when people win an election, if you ever study politics, especially if like they win by a landslide or they come in with a lot of fanfare, usually the first 2 years are kind of tough, because then all of the stuff that they want to do or say they want to do that they genuinely may want to actually do, it requires people on the other side to come along. And that's tough. It requires compromise, patience. And one thing that's interesting in really successful people is they have this unique mix. It doesn't seem to like pan out, or how is it possible? But it is. How can you be so impatient and patient at the same time? I relate to this because I am one of the more impatient motherfuckers you'll ever meet. Because anytime I've tried to like get other people involved in what we do, and this is a big problem for me at Men's Health. Like, people just couldn't stay at my tempo. I have a tempo that I go at that very few people seem to be able to go at. And you could say, well, it's my fault. You tire people out, you burn them out, you push them too hard. Well, you know, I could also say it's their fault. They can't step up to the challenge and do what's required to do great things, to really have an impact in life. So it's two sides of a coin. And the reality is, I'm also a very patient person, believe it or not, because I mean, how else do you not miss a workout since the day you were 14 years old? Because, you know, if I was expecting overnight results, I would have quit when I was 14. I'm 41 now. I'm going to be 41 soon. You know, so it is this unique blend that people that find success in whatever they're approaching or committing to, they have this weird mix of patience and impatience. But his impatience in the first couple of years proved to be a challenge, because he couldn't get things done and he was getting his approval ratings went down, etc. But you know, it's just I really almost want to kind of pivot to the schmoozing. You know, I had my first cigar cut, like my little brother, I hadn't seen him for about 3 years since the pandemic. He visited. It was just one of the best weeks of my life. It was just my little brother, my wife, me, the dog, the beautiful desert weather, sun, pool, hanging out, eating good food, catching up. It was really just like what this is how I would live if I didn't have to do all this shit, you know, that we have to do in this life to make money and make a living and do the things we do. But I wanted to get a cigar. I felt compelled to maybe try a cigar. And I hesitated to even bring this up because I am anti-smoking. Like, I think one of the few things you can do to, like, guarantee a more graceful aging is not to drink, not to smoke, and avoiding hard drugs. But I also, my grandpa was, he lived to 98. He had about 5+ cigars a day. And he's who got me in, he got me into sports. I used to watch all the NBA, NFL games with him. I'd even watch golf with him. And we used to hang out and talk a lot. And I was always around him and was smoking. So it almost like it was a way for me to, like, he's since passed, but just connect with him. And I'm just wondering, like, why did he like it so much? So I had a cigar, and I guess I kind of get it. Like, it is a really, it's like, it's an energizing, relaxing vibe. I would never do it regularly, at least at this time. But you see Arnold, he's just constantly smoking cigars throughout the documentary, but also on the job. It's funny. I was joking with my wife, and again, don't take this seriously, especially if you're young. You know, it seems like all winners seem to smoke cigars. But anyway, the cigar tent was such a unique approach, and he just got people to come in and meet with him, and he could pick people's brains, and he did what ultimately I've got away from and that I used to do early in my career. That was a big part of the reason why, like, most of you would never know who I was had I not done all the fucking schmoozing I did early in my career. And it almost like, I'm kind of almost like a different person now, because if you only know me recently, you'd be like, BJ Schmooze, because yeah, man, like I am like on an island. I'm like, I've completely closed myself off, and it's making it. It's made it a lot harder. It really has. And what I'm trying to get out there more in terms of just, you know, reaching out to people, getting them on the podcast, even if I don't necessarily know them, if it's someone's, whose work I respect, that's one way that I can do it. Anytime I'm in an area where I know someone, I'm going to try to reach out more. But, man, that the schmoozing or networking is a big part of it. And you got to be able to go in rooms and talk to people that you don't necessarily like, or that maybe turn you off, but you got to be willing to play the game. And I was willing to do that when I was young because I didn't have anything to fall back on. I didn't have an audience. I didn't have a base of people that were down for whatever, because they respected my unique approach to fitness. And they know that even if I sometimes say the wrong things or do the wrong thing, that at least from a standpoint of the programs I make, you always get the best I have at the moment. At that time, I didn't have that. So I had to be willing to go in and meet new people and strangers and, you know, and honestly just kiss ass. And I hate doing it. I fucking hated it. And that's why, like, the moment I said to myself at the time, like, the moment I don't have to do this anymore, I will not do this anymore. But as a result of completely eliminating it, I have made it more challenging on myself. Like, when you know people that are as successful or successful adjacent or more successful than you, it tends to rise, to elevate what you do too. And that's been like, and I'm that's why I'm very grateful for my friendship with Jeremy Scott of the Jeremy Scott Fitness Podcast. Please subscribe if you don't already listen to it. 500+ episodes, an all-time motivator and legend in the fitness game, in my opinion. Someone that I frankly discovered far earlier than a lot of people have out there. I was lucky to be able to bring him on to do some men's health work. And what I saw in Jeremy was just, you know, a willingness to start at ground zero and never stop. And obviously he looks amazing. He knows what he's doing, but he has a mentality that goes and travels like a championship defense. It goes in and out of the gym and works in all aspects of life. So I'm lucky to have that, but I need more of those types of relationships in my life if I want to just not make it so hard on myself, because if you try to do everything on your own, it's really tough, man. There's not enough hours in the day. You'll never have enough help. You know, I just this morning I had to spend, all in total, I'll have to have spent 3 hours total on social media just today. 3 fucking hours. And by the way, I don't respond to comments. That's not responding to comments or anything. That's just getting 3 posts up throughout the day on 6 different platforms. Like, that's 3 hours that I could be doing more podcasts or making more workouts or really doing what I love. But at the current time, I've got to do that shit. And it's a long way of saying, basically, I was really, it kind of slapped me in the face. I've got to start schmoozing again. I've got to start getting out there, not just reconnecting with old acquaintances, but meeting some new people and establishing some new relationships, because it is just too hard to do this on your own, man. It just wears you down, and you don't have people that you can talk to when times are tough that can relate to what you're going through. And we all need that, no matter what we're pursuing. But the other piece of it too, obviously, he did 8 years in office and moved on, but he's remained kind of an activist. And, you know, one video really stood out. A lot of you saw this. This went viral on social media right around the time of, I believe, 2018. That crazy, was it 2016 or 2020? It was one of the crazy recent elections, and a lot of this neo-Nazi, anti-Semitic bullshit was going on. And he just came out and spoke from the heart as a native Austrian who grew up in an era where all of the men that served on the wrong side of World War II and bought into that ideology of hate and cynicism and negativity and evil were left depressed and devastated in the wake of that defeat, and how it impacted them moving forward. And, you know, like, all the great, the truly great people, and I maybe I'll speak more from an athletic standpoint, because, again, I'm such a big fan of sports, and athletics has been, like, such a big part of my life. If it's not for you, I apologize, but it's kind of in my DNA. I train like an athlete. I compete like an athlete. I live like an athlete. I try to approach that with my business, too, and, you know, it's something that's always related. I've always related to, but, you know, I think about Muhammad Ali, you know, who was willing to speak out against civil rights and the wrongs against Black Americans in this country. I think about, you know, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I think about Jim Brown. I'm sorry, Joe Brown. Jesus, get it together. Jim Brown, who recently passed. Again, not perfect people. Neither was Arnold. He's open about some of the mistakes he made with regards to treating women, invading their personal space, getting handsy, you know. And you know what's funny, too? Like, we do live in an era where I think it's a combination of we just have very low IQ people, and we have, and I don't mean that like, I don't mean that in a, I mean, I guess it can take it negative, but really, people don't have any critical thinking skills anymore, it seems to me. There's no gray area. You're either a bad person or a good person. You're either right or you're wrong. And people have no ability to give the time someone lives in with perspective. And the whole goal of this whole thing that we try to do in a single generation or life and then in multiple is we try to keep raising the collective. We try to get better. We try to learn from our mistakes and our wrongs and, you know, right the wrongs of the past and keep improving so we all can live a better life. And, you know, we all make mistakes. None of our heroes are perfect. He's very open about his personal failures, particularly the affair he had, which resulted in a kid with his house caretaker. I don't want to say maid, the woman who cleaned his house for a long time. He had an affair and ended up having a child, and it broke up his marriage. And now, even though the family stays close, you can tell it really affects him with regards to how it's just not the same. You know, all the previous pictures, it was him and his wife next to each other and then the kids, and now they're still with the kids, but he's on one side, his wife is on the other. You can just see there's a clear delineation where their relationship is done and it's just about the kids now. And this happens. Like, this happens to a lot of people. This happened with my own family. I know I have friends who this has happened to. Nobody's perfect. And a lot of times, too, people that are really good parents tend to sometimes lose their own identity in terms of the husband-wife or husband-husband-wife-wife or just spouse coupling relationship that was where it was in the inception of all of it, right? Because you tend to put your own needs, the relationship needs, to the side for the kids. Anyway, it's kind of a long way of saying basically, look, and by the way, like, I mean, this was like a normal thing in the 80s and 90s. It just was. I'm not saying it's a good thing. I've been groped at a fitness event before. I mean, I was fucking doing a fitness event, and this woman put her fucking, like, she completely cupped my ass. Like, her finger was halfway up my asshole. Now, it was weird. I tried to get the fuck out of there as fast as I could, but I wasn't offended by it. But it's a totally different relationship than it being a man doing it to a woman. That I've never done. If I would have done that, you would have heard by now, by the way. I've been around long enough where you would have found out. But I've always tried to just keep my distance from people. But people used to be a lot handsier. I mean, I was in Times Square getting ready for, I had this big, while I was still at Men's Health, I made this like gold medal workout thing for the Olympics. I was going to be in Good Morning America the next day. And I was walking through Times Square the day before, and Katie Couric was doing like a series of interviews. She spotted me, she interviewed me, and she started to like grab my chest. And she's like, "You're so strong." I'm like, "Wow, she obviously fucks." But, again, it is a totally different dynamic when it's a woman doing it to a man. It's obviously not as threatening, and it's not the same power dynamic. And again, he talks about how, even though he was defensive at the time, it was bullshit and he regrets it. He apologizes. All we can do is learn from the mistakes we make. And it was a different time. So you might be offended by that, but look, I'm done worrying about what offends people. I just speak the truth as I see it. And if you're lucky to live long enough and you haven't made mistakes, or you don't look back on your past and be like, "Man, what a fucking piece of shit I was," or "the stupid shit I said or did." Most of the mistakes we make when we're young, by the way, they're more of a result of the environment, the reflection of what our parents or the people that are closest to us thought, than they were our own native thoughts, which is why we tend to grow as we get older and learn and evolve and get better as people. All right. I don't want to get off this goddamn soapbox. All right. But I should probably wrap this fucking podcast up. Sorry, it's been a long ass day, and I'm just trying to get these in. Schedule's been pretty crazy lately. I got a big break coming up, and I can't fucking wait to take the month of August off. But I really encourage you to watch this documentary. Even if you weren't a fan of Arnold, there were just some really big themes that I took away. The nonstop nature of his approach: stay busy, be useful, no time to be in your feelings. His enthusiasm, just taking on challenges instead of like having anxiety about it, like embracing the joy of being alive and able to perform and have a platform. That's something I know I need to work on. The way that he just engrosses himself in the process, his focus on vision. Vision is something that, it is a gift, by the way. Not everybody has it, but we can all at least get more clear visions of where we're trying to go in and out of the gym. And anytime someone has success in such different realms like this, three lives in one, there are principles you can take that you can apply to live a better life, have more of an impact, and just make each day more worth living. You know what I'm saying? And I really, really enjoyed it. I think it was really well done. And I think you see a man at 75, likely the last quarter of his life, hopefully he makes it to 100, with a lot of wisdom to pass on. And that's the beauty of it. Is, I think, also something that's kind of a very scary trend right now is the way that we just seem to throw people over 50 away. I mean, in the history of the world, the elder community, the senior members of our community, they have the most wisdom. These are the people that can pass on so much knowledge and so much perspective to us to do better now. And the ageism is a real thing right now. I mean, I feel it in my career. It's someone over 40 now in fitness when it's just, you know, it's really, it is a young person's game. And it's even worse for women. It's even more challenging in other aspects as well. So it just, one thing that I really learned when I was young is just always surround yourself with people wiser than you. And I've always loved older people. Even when I was young, I hated kids. It's probably why I'll never have kids. It's a big reason. I just always preferred, I loved hanging out with my grandparents. You know, they just had such great stories. They had such great perspective. They were beyond the bullshit. They had such honest conversations. They could find humor in almost any situation. And it just impacted me in a great way. And I just, he reminds me of my grandpa in a lot of ways now at 75. But man, a true goat, a true legend of all time. So much motivation in it. Thanks for listening. Be sure to subscribe to the episode so you don't, the podcast, you don't miss an episode. Got a lot of great stuff coming. A big interview with Eric Rokiewicz. I know I fucked up his name, which I'm sure he's going to appreciate. The creator of the Squat Wedgie Slant Boards. And he's got some great new units and iterations of the equipment that came out. We're going to talk about advanced slant board training applications. I also have Tony Cavallaro, actor, comedian. You've seen him on HBO's The Righteous Gemstones. He's been all over the place lately, and he's a big fitness fan. He actually reached out to me at one point because he used to do all my men's health workouts, and I actually met him right before the pandemic. We had a great lunch together, and I haven't seen him since, but it's going to be nice to reconnect with him and learn about how he stays fit with his busy acting career and how he finds humor in very dark times as they've been the last couple years. So great stuff is on the way. A 5-star rating. You know, I gave you about an hour here. I asked for just a second to give me a 5-star on iTunes or Spotify. If you're on iTunes, yes, you can also throw in just a brief review. Say, BJ Podcast, good. All right. And then if you want to ask a question for consideration to be answered on the podcast and or make an episode request, you can also do it in there. I'll call it the iTunes mailbag. So that's a way I can get people interacting in the show, incentivize you to take the time to show me some love so I can get this out to more good people like you. Be sure to go get a free 7-day trial to the dailybj.com/TDBJ app. All right. We have such good stuff going on right now. I'm improving the look and feel of the site. The most complete home workout program on the fucking market. You can cancel anytime. And I really think you'll enjoy like just the flow of what we're doing over there right now. I'm going to keep trying to elevate it to the next level. And definitely, I recommend signing up on your desktop or laptop first at thedailybj.com, then go and download the app on the Apple or Android stores. It's a more seamless process. But be sure to also get the mobile app for the best user experience. And then don't forget to check out the new summer swag at sleevessoldseparately.com. The best tank tops, joggers, sleeveless hoodies, gym and swim shorts in the fucking game. Check our reviews. The 5-star reviews keep just coming in. It's a homegrown company, and I take the same anal perfectionist approach to the way we make our apparel as I do with the workouts we do. So, you know, that's something that I think if you want to do well in multiple things, there's just a standard that you try to hold yourself to in what you put out. Things are never perfect, but you try to improve them every time that you work on it or you get something new out. You learn the lessons, you keep making it better, you keep pushing it forward. So hope you enjoyed this episode. Check out the Arnold documentary on Netflix. And don't forget to Netflix and stretch. There's a nice 14-day rotating mobility program in the Daily BJ app that you can do while watching TV at night, even while watching Arnold. Love you guys. Peace.